anxious to step through the gate again, Major?
Yes, I am.
We all are.
Would you like us to bring back anything special?
No, thanks.
Groceries, new outfit, flatware?
No. Just yourselves in one piece, please. Dial it up. You're safe.
Welcome to the Jumping Puddles podcast. Be sure to listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and or YouTube. And follow us at Jumping Puddles Podcast on Tumblr and Instagram, and Jumping Pud Pod on Twitter. And if you want to support us, be sure to check out our Ko-fi. Hi, I'm Sam, and with me are my fellow co-hosts, Tor and Ash.
Hey.
Hey.
Lieutenant Colonel John Shepard's team finds a civilization haunted by a string of mysterious killings by the Deimos, a.k.a. a Wraith. While hunting it down, they find a young female wraith named Elia, whose father, Zadok, apparently found a serum to stop her need to feed.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun. We'll see if that one was good. We'll see.
I feel like more than any other episode so far, the dun, dun, dun really fits the vibe of this episode. It's our most horror episode yet.
That is true. This is certainly an episode of television. This is an episode.
Do you think that bad?
We're just diving straight in. Okay. I think I'm harder on this episode because we just had Condemned.
Oh.
And I think... Right? And, like, I remember we were starting out, like, remember we kept saying, like, or I kept saying, I was like, I barely remember season two. But, like, I did remember that I didn't like season two as much as season one or three. I feel like now it's starting to come back a little more. I'm like, oh, okay. I just feel like, and obviously not every episode of TV has to be, like, an absolute banger. Obviously it's kind of, like, impossible to do. I know that. It's okay. But I just think when you compare it to season one, right, like, just compare, like, the first, like, I don't even know what episode Instinct is, like, eight or seven?
Seven,
okay. Like, when you compare it to, like, the first seven episodes of season one, right, I just feel like season one so far is still just so much stronger. And I think, but it's also, like, weird, right, because we've had some amazing episodes, like, The Intruder, I was going to say Duet, but like Trinity. But I just feel like some of the story isn't hitting. And I feel like we've kind of regressed a little, right? Like, this feels like a reject SG-1 episode. Like, it feels like something. Sorry, I'm so sorry. It just feels like a step back. And I think, again, I wouldn't have been so harsh if this wasn't so soon after Condemned. And it's not like this isn't going to happen again. We know the tower is coming. Oh, God.
The second tower. Two?
Yeah. Ooh. I don't know. Like, again, it's like these episodes are being held together, like, by the cast, right? And, like, by the actors. Because, like, even in Condemned, we found good things because, like, the team. And in this one, you know, we found good things because of the team. But I'm just like, the story, like, come on, like, put a little more effort, right? I don't know what it is about, like, these group episodes, but, like, maybe, sorry, I'm just ranting about this, but I was thinking, like, maybe, like, this should have been, like, a Carson episode. Maybe, like, he bonds with the Wraith, you know, and he kind of starts to, like, think, like, oh, maybe I could heal her, maybe I could help her, because she was, like, a super nice girl, and then it goes horribly. And then maybe he's like, I'm scared to do anything with the retrovirus anymore. Maybe, like, he kind of backs away. Or maybe it even pushes them to be in it more. Because he's like, no, like, there are nice people. I can fix them. And it kind of leads into the whole, like, later thing with Michael. I don't know. I just feel like there's more. There's more that could have been done. But yeah. It is what it is.
I think I see
it's an episode.
What you're saying in comparison to season one. Like, season one episodes did a lot more character work. In addition to having, like, a plotty off-world mission. So I see where you're looking for that balance, and it's not exactly in this episode at all. And I actually really like your idea of having it more Carson-focused, because he's really only introduced at the halfway point of the episode. And it doesn't really go into how he feels about his responsibility in the situation. We really only see him sympathizing with the father, and that's about it. Like, that was our only, like, we don't see how he feels about it after. And you're right, I think it would be interesting to have this sort of be more of an explicit step towards the Michael situation, because it's such a,
yeah.
It gives him personal motivation beyond, like, scientific discovery and like, trying to protect Atlantis. Like, it's more of a, it's more of a personal thing. Like, I feel like it could have been more of, like, a doctor ambition. So, yeah, I see what you mean, and I agree. I think it could have done more work for Carson's character, for sure. But instead, I feel like it focused more on the village people's character, which is fine, but I'm more interested in the expedition.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we never see them again, the village.
Right. People.
Also, I think a thing that we praised so strongly about season one was that, like, not the first episodes, maybe that much, but, like, in later on, they had always, they connected a little bit to, like, the bigger story.
Mm.
And this one, I think this episode ties quite neatly into the next one.
Mm-hmm.
With the, like, yeah, the next one starts immediately, like, conversion starts immediately after Instinct.
Right.
But, yeah, otherwise, like, I... It's funny, Sam, that you said that it's like a rejected SG-1 episode, and maybe just it feels more like an SG-1 episode because it's more of a not Alien of the Week, but like Planet of the Week episode. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't have anything against that. I like that if it's like evened out in the bigger season. But yeah, that's what I was thinking about why this episode doesn't hit quite the way others do. And also when you said it would be more interesting to have it, like, character-centric, I had to think of Taylor. Because your ideas with Carson is amazing, and it would make sense, especially with Michael and the whole Wraith experiments and everything. But I also thought it also could have... focused a bit more on Taylor, and I was glad that they remember that she has powers and that she can feel the Wraith and that she tried to connect with Ilya on that level a little bit. But they could have explored that. All that would be like a different episode, but and they could have explored that as well. Doing a bit more character work.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that it shows that not, like, the experience of the people in Pegasus with the Wraith are not all the same. They are different. For example, this planet doesn't seem to, like, they have the myths of, like, the Wraith. Like, they know about the callings and everything, but it hasn't happened in, like, a long time. And I thought how interesting that, like, the consciousness that the Wraith are around and might come back someday is not as present as, for example, with the Hoffans or the Athosians or the Tedans. And so I like to see that, and I like to see that the Wraith and the Deimos had become, yeah, like, more of a myth on this planet.
Yeah, and you're right. Maybe you have a point. Like, if they dived too much into the planet and the like what was going on the planet in regards to their culture and stuff, then we wouldn't have enough time, or the focus would be taken away from the Wraith, and then we wouldn't really get to have that fleshed out story. So yeah, I think it might have been better for the balance this way.
Yeah, well, I still think that, like, even just, like, little things, though, I think they could have, like, just, like, done, like, a little bit just to try to, like, make it, like, stand out, I think. That's my thing, where I think for me it's just, like, having a hard time, like, connecting to this episode. Because it just, like, even though we got so much, like, new, like, Wraith information and stuff, it's, like, something that, like, you watch the episode and you're like, oh, okay, this is cool. But then you get, like, conversion, and you're like, well, this is better, right? Because, like, you kind of, like, it built off of, like, this episode, right? So I feel like this is an episode where you can watch once and be like, I'm good, I already have the information. And I think that's where I'm coming from. Where I just think, for me, it's just, I'm having a hard time connecting to this episode. Mm-hmm. And I wish that, like, even if they didn't, like, expand on, like, the people anymore, I just wish it was, like, a different setting, or, like, a different, where they made it, them seem more alien. Or, like, there's just something. Because I just think the village and, like, the villagers itself, they just kind of just feel so generic. And I think especially after Condemned, so soon, where I'm just, like, just another generic episode. Where I think they kind of lost me a bit. Because there is, like, some fun stuff, right? Like, there's such great, like, character stuff. And we do learn a lot about the Wraith. The only reason why people would rewatch it would be, like, for the end, to see, like, John get bit and be like, all right, next episode, here we go. You know, like, that's where I'm like, ugh. But.
Yeah, it has kind of a little bit of everything, but nothing is really standing out.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like, okay, this is so mean. This is so mean. But it feels like an AI generated episode, right? It's like. Like, you put it into an algorithm and you're like, write me a Stargate Atlantis episode, and it would come out with this.
Don't tell that to the Stargate AI.
It'll become too powerful.
Maybe the lore stuff, like, it wouldn't write that, so we can just cut that out. But, like, it's fine. This episode's fine. It's fine. And I think there's some great, like, character stuff. So, like, it makes up for, like, us, like, watching it, right? And I think it is worth it, like, if you're watching the show, obviously, for the first time, you obviously, I think, are going to be fine with this episode. It's just, I think it's just hard on rewatch. But whatever, we can move on, because we got to, like, the actual episode. We're just talking about, like, the surface level stuff, but yeah.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that since we're there. How did we, since we're saying we're having a hard time connecting with this episode, how do we feel about the father-daughter relationship in the story? And those characters as individuals, like, do we feel, like, did we feel anything for them? I have to say, personally, that upon rewatch, I had forgotten the twist at the end of the episode, where it turns out that he was not actually an old man, but he was the guy's son that he said died in the beginning of the episode. So, like, that was cool. The fact that I forgot is really interesting, because I've seen the show so many times. But yeah, so how do we feel? How do we feel about our two side characters this episode? Elia and, what was his name?
Zadik, correct?
Zadik, right.
I felt bad for Elia. Like, maybe I can start with her, because I can maybe say a bit more about her. Because you could, I mean, she was brought up like a human, basically, but she wasn't, and she, but she tried to be human, I guess, and she really wanted to be human, if that's problematic. Maybe we can discuss it or not. but I felt so bad for her, because she tried, I think, she was not used to having other people around, and for her father, he just treated her like a human, and she was used to that. And then she was like this happy girl, and she was going around baking cookies and making tea. And then she tried to offer it to people, and they were like, "No, you're disgusting." And I think she tried to ignore it at first, but then in the end, she couldn't, and I felt so bad for her. I think it's pretty horrifying if you think about it that she fed on her father basically, and that he was
cool with it.
Yeah, that he offered. Oh wait, I don't know. He halfway forced her to feed on him, which is kind of it's kind of scary to think of that. And I think it shows maybe the bond that he felt towards her. And yeah, what a sacrifice. And I think it's the first time. It's one of the like we have seen Wraith feed like a lot of times, right? But we've never seen it like this. And normally it's just like the human that doesn't enjoy it, but this time it was like, I don't know if they enjoyed it. Yay. But she still had to do it. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just rambling here because I don't think I have much to say about them or their relationship. But yeah.
Yeah, I will say the plot twist, right? I also completely forgot about that. I think it is fun. Mm. It's definitely shocking. Again, but I don't know if it's a good or bad thing that we just completely forgot about it. I guess it just doesn't stick with you at all. I don't know. Or, I don't know. But, you know, plot twist is fun. Okay, I liked Elia. I think she's cool, fun. Obviously, you feel sympathetic for her, right? It does suck. I like her relationship with her father. I think it is, like, really sweet. And you see they have a whole life together and stuff. And I do like that. We get a little backstory of him right at the end where he's like, yeah, like, I had just lost my wife and son to, like the flu or whatever. So he was dealing with grief, and then he finds this child, and he's like, I'm gonna have her. So it is, like, it's cute and sad. But I don't know if I like him on his own. I feel like him on his own was giving nothing memorable. Yeah. Nothing of any substance. He was just a guy. But, like, his scenes with his, like, Elia was cute. And it was like, okay. And, like, his death scene was like, oh, this sucks. Like, she literally killed him. Like, that is so sad. And then she, like, becomes this monster and, like, just completely loses herself. And they kill her in the end. Like, it really is, like, a really sad episode and very horror-esque. Yeah, I don't know. It just, again, it's just not very memorable, unfortunately, right? It's not like this changed something in the members, and it's not like they were like, wow, there's good Wraith. No. See what they do to Michael in episode 19, like, you know.
I was gonna say, I was trying to figure out what it was that was holding me back from the episode, in the sense that I really love, like, the pseudo familial relationships on TV and in media in general. And so I was like, I feel something, but not all the way. And what is it that's holding me back? And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said he's just some guy. Like, like we see Elia, you know, by herself with her father and interacting with Taylor. And you get more of a sense of who she is and what her struggle is. And you sympathize with her a lot. But I feel like with him, I don't know who he is outside of, like, his motivations for keeping her alive and, like, being lonely and sort of selfish. So, yeah. So I think that was why I was lacking in a little bit of feeling for them.
And, you know, sorry, really quick. I just thought of this. I wonder if maybe if it would have been better to show him saving her in the intro.
Mm.
Or maybe, like, just, like, early on establishing, yeah, like, establishing that, like, he cares for her, he found her, he is now her dad. Because I think we learn all this really cool information about him as he's dying. Like, you know, like, where he's like, my wife is dead, I found this kid, I felt bad for her, and then, you know, she fed on me. Like, I feel like maybe some of it could have been reworked into the intro, right? And the team finds him, and then it's like, we know that, like, how he cares for her, and we know that, like, he feels... he had all this loss. Now he feels about, you know, he cares about his daughter. And then it becomes, like, this conflict where it's, like, we're torn. Like, what side are we on? Are we on the team side or are we on this side, right?
And that's interesting. I've been thinking a bit about the horror aspect and how that could have been shown a bit more. It would have been interesting to see Elia actually hunt, I guess, and see how she Like, yeah, does she show remorse about killing people or taking years of people that aren't her father? Because I think she feels she kind of hates herself because she lies to him. But Sam, when you said, yeah, does she feel bad for killing people? I was like, that's a really good question because, yeah, we don't see that. She feels obviously bad for feeding on her father, but does she feel that way about other people? I mean, they hate her, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different relationship, but that would be interesting. And maybe, yeah, to see, like... I'm just imagining, like a Twilight scene, and there's, like, a lot of, like, a mist, and there's the Wraith, and she's kind of following him, and they're both, like... A bit like I'm imagining it a little bit like Whispers, but
yeah,
like the why? Because that's like the horror episode of
True
Stargate, right? Yeah, but
the horror like, bit of like misogyny.
I always forget that it's the same episode.
So sad.
Yeah, but you know the vibe of like it's kind of dark and misty and
the
like
fog. That. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, the fog, yeah. Exactly.
Well, you know, even speaking beyond, like, the emotional aspect, it would have been cool to see, like, a female Wraith hunting. Because we don't ever see, like, female Wraiths, like, in the field hunting.
Yeah,
like,
we only ever see the queen.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, was she supposed to be a queen? Like, was there, like, when she was hunting with this other Wraith, was he, like, her subordinate? Like, is there, like, an instinctual power dynamic because she's a female Wraith and he was a male Wraith? Like, that is, like, something that would have been interesting to see as well. Because, yeah, I think this is the only female Wraith we see in the series that is not explicitly a queen.
I don't know if it's mentioned in the episode, but do you think they hunted together? Like, I thought that she was just, like, felled when he was hunting, and then she just followed him, so to cover her tracks.
Oh, right.
True.
Because she doesn't like him, right? She feels his presence, and he knows she's there, and I think he tries to influence her, like, there, with their psychic link.
Mm.
But did they actually team up?
True. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe they did.
Well, that's another aspect, right? Of like potential story. I think that'd be really cool to kind of see maybe again like a flashback of maybe like him hunting and then like he knows that she's there and like he'll kind of like maybe instinctively he takes care of her, kind of like a mentor-mentee relationship, or like he'll leave them kind of alive and then leave so she can like go in and like feed on the person. Yeah. Or it's a kind of like I'm giving so much depth to a Wraith. But, like, it's, like, he's sort of, like...
That's good.
Like, you know, he's in her mind, like, kind of, like, saying, like, hey, like, you gotta come with your people or whatever, you know? And kind of maybe, like, he resents her, but, like, it's instinctual that he takes care of her, so, like, he helps her anyways, right? Like, that would be really interesting, because it's, you know, something with, like, Wraith... I mean, we never talk about Wraith children again. but like, you know, with the Wraith children, right? Like, what is that whole thing? Like, that'd be really interesting if they just have like this automatic sort of like instinct, to take care of the kids, like regardless, right? Where you kind of see that where maybe he doesn't want to, maybe he's like, you know, disgusted with her and like angry at her, but there's an instinct to take care of her. And then it could tie into like her father's instinct, her real father's instinct to protect her and to keep her from going down that path, right? So it's like just two paths.
True. The contrast would have been super interesting, for sure.
Right? Like a little angel and devil on your shoulder, right? Yeah. Like, which one do you listen to? And then it's like, he's telling her, well, like, we're family. Like, that guy isn't family. He's human. Like, that's food, you know? Food. That's a cow, bitch. Like, no. Like,
you know, like the opposite of Finding Nemo. Humans are food, not friends.
Yeah. That's what he's telling her.
Speaking of conflict and inner struggle, I was wondering what you guys thought of the scene that we just mentioned where Elia kills that other wraith. So do we think that Elia killed the wraith because there's a couple of reasons. She was angry about, you know, the visions that he was putting in her head and angry with him for trying to connect with her that way that Sam was mentioning. And, or she was trying to protect Rodney, because she wanted to prove that she still had goodness in her, and, or, she was killing the wraith like another predator would kill a predator that was trying to take its prey. Yeah. Like, what was the true intention?
That's a very interesting question, because it, it requires, like, a stand on how much Elia was still Elia.
Right.
In the end. Or at that point, because it's after she takes the retrovirus and regresses more into an Erratus bug. And, like, she becomes even less human. So how much of, like, the human teaching that she got from her father is still there? How much of her human personality, in quotation marks, is still there when she kills the wraith? Was she trying to feed on Rodney after this? I watched the episodes 2 hours ago. Why do I not remember?
You, you. It goes in your brain and goes out the other way.
She didn't. What happened was the wraith, the big wraith, had his hand on Rodney trying to feed on him. Yeah. And then she came in and, like, did the whole, like, neck takedown thing. Then she turned on Rodney and, like, growled at him and then ran away.
Okay.
Pretty sure that's how it happened.
Yeah.
Wait, am I confusing? Which part is that where Carson, doesn't Carson shoot a wraith for Rodney?
I think Rodney tries to shoot the wraith for Carson and then it doesn't work.
I think it's all, I think that's all the same scene.
Yeah.
I think, so Rodney and Carson are trying to find Elia. The wraith attacks them. I think the wraith first takes down Carson, mm-hmm. and then Rodney tries to feed on him. And then maybe Carson tries to shoot the wraith, but... Oh, yeah, no, he tries to shoot the wraith, but also Elia comes in and snaps the guy's neck. I'm so impressed by this scene. Like, that's the part that stuck to me. That's just, like, because she's so tiny.
Yeah, and you can see, and like...
the
physical difference.
Yeah. Yeah, and then she runs away. The way I watched the episode is that she's not herself anymore, and not... We have to talk about this human, part human thing later, because, yeah. But, like, I don't think... I'm not sure if she had, like, rational thoughts anymore. I felt like her instincts were completely taken over, and, so I don't think she killed the wraith because she tried to protect Rodney, my opinion. I think it's more of what you suggested with, like, a predator killing a predator, and then maybe she wasn't hungry. I don't know. And that's where she left, or something else happened. But, yeah, I don't think it was like her, oh, I need to prove that I'm worth being loved or whatever, because I don't think she was at that point that she was capable of that thought anymore. I don't know if that's too harsh. Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I definitely think it was like a predator type of thing. And I actually think that maybe I kind of combine it. Maybe the reason why she just left Rodney is maybe like because obviously, like, she wasn't close with any of the gang. Like, maybe you could say she had, like, a moment with Taylor. But again, they had, like, one scene. So it's not like she, you know, had any connection to them, right? And I think we've seen before with her saying that, like, she's killed other humans, that maybe it's when she doesn't have a connection with them, right? But maybe she sort of, like, still in the back of her mind was like, oh, hey, father. Or, like, the guy, right? Like, the one guy I have a connection with that's still a human. So maybe after she killed him, she was like, all right, got rid of the predator. She's like, now time to find dad. She wasn't really there, but, like, she only had one thought in her mind left, really, which was, like, the dad of it all. But then I don't know if that makes sense entirely, because I don't remember what the fuck happened after. I don't remember. I think they just kill her, right? Like, I don't know.
Does she attack her dad before or after that? Does she attack her dad, or is it the Wraith?
Oh, the other Wraith. I think she attacks him, right? Doesn't she kill him? I would just like to reiterate that we all watched this episode
an hour ago.
Literally, yeah. I watched it 2 days ago. Okay. Like, we watched it recently, and we can't remember the most basic plot details.
I'm looking it up.
I think she attacks her dad and runs off.
So, okay, first Elia kills the Wraith. That's first. She kills the Wraith. Okay. And then right after the scene, Zadok finds Elia and then throws him, essentially. And then McKay and Beckett come find him. The villagers come and find them. Then John comes and finds them. And then John, Ronan, and Taylor go after Elia together. That's the order of events.
Thank you, cool.
Dude, Jesus, this is humiliating.
Just to clarify.
We can cut it all.
The reason I was asking if you felt that she was really in there or not was because of John. So I feel like in my head, if John was listening to Zadok's sob story about this kid, I honestly don't know if he would care, like, to... This is horrible to say. I don't know if he would care to, like, go after her himself as opposed to the villagers go after her, because maybe he would show her, like, a modicum of mercy based on his story. Like, I just don't think... I don't think he would show her mercy because of the father asking him to, but I feel like because of this narrative, like, oh, she saved Rodney's life, like, oh, now we have, like, we kind of are obligated to like, care, because she was, like, trying to help us. Like, she tried to help the member of the team. Does that make sense? Or is that too harsh? Is that too harsh on John to make that assumption?
Oh man, that is tough. Because I kind of agree in the sense that I don't know if he would have any, if that story would impact him in any way, right? Because I think by this point he's like, she's gone. He's like, no, like, she's like not. Like, I think even before he would have been like, oh, let's save her. Because I think Beckett tells him, like, oh, bring her back alive for, like, I can maybe reverse it if you bring her back alive.
Right.
And then all this, and he sees, like, the dad dying, and I think maybe he's like, all right, never mind, fuck that, it's not gonna work. I don't know if it's maybe it's more like his sense of duty, right? Because he told the villagers, like, from day one when they got there, he was like, oh, we're gonna go kill the Wraith for you. So I think it could be, like, out of obligation, maybe. More so. I don't know, it's hard, it's tough.
Yeah, because the reason why I'm reading so much into it is because Shepard, kind of after the whole flashback, is, like, trying morally to, like, I don't know, like, he's asking all these moral questions, like, did she ever feed on anyone besides you? And the father lies and said no, like, she didn't feed on anyone, when he knows that she did. And then he asks, and you're saying that she tried to protect Rodney. Like, he's trying to, I think morally, he's trying to figure out, like, is it okay if we kill this person or not? Or should we be, like, trying to spare them? That's why I was thinking, like, the... Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but the order of his questions was interesting.
Like, I definitely could see him to be the type to be like, okay, like, can I kill this person, right? And he's trying to, like, figure out. I think it could be, like, a mix of both.
Yeah.
Where he's like, okay, I'm trying to figure this out. But also he's like, regardless, like, I have to deal with this. Like, even if he doesn't kill her or not, he has to deal with it because he said so to, like, the villagers.
Right.
And because I think, like, because Carson was like, hey, bring her back if you can. I can try to reverse this, maybe. But I also think, like, this is hard, but, like, I wonder if he's, like, seeing her dad, right, that she threw him and, like, basically killed him. Like, I wonder, maybe he's trying to delude himself into thinking that she's still there, right, by asking these questions, when in reality it's, like, she's not. Like, she wouldn't have thrown her dad otherwise, maybe.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, like, he wants her to be...
like, yeah, human. Still there.
Yeah.
Because I also, like, no one wants to, first of all, kill. I know we joke about that. But then it's also, like, I don't know if he's super, I mean, this is so dark, but, like, maybe he's trying to, like, figure out ways out of it because she is, like, a young girl, right?
Yeah, she's a kid. For sure. If
he's an older guy, he would have been like, ah, fuck, we're killing this guy. Yeah. But because of that, he's like, hold on. He's like, did she do anything right? Like, did she, like, tell me one thing and I can forgive her. Like...
Do you think he saw more a person than a wraith?
See, that's an interesting question in itself, because I feel like he spent the least amount of time with her. Like, he was not there. Like, he met her, and then he left to go get Carson. So then the only time he saw her again was when, he didn't see her again after, I don't think. Like, she had attacked all these people, and then he came back like, what the hell happened? It's like the Community episode where Troy comes back into the apartment and everything's on fire. Like, I feel like that was what he walked into. Honestly, horribly, I feel like morally it would have been easier for him if they had told him, like, yeah, she fit on people before, yeah, like, she didn't mean to protect Rodney, but because they were like, no, she didn't feed on other people, and she tried to protect Rodney, maybe, I feel like he was kind of forced to see her as still, like, there was something still inside her that was human, I think.
Yeah. Or something there was something in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, oh man, this is so interesting. I know, it's so funny how we're just wrapping around these hypotheticals. We have to talk about the episode at some point. But hypotheticals are more fun, I guess. But it's also just kind of like, I think it's interesting to kind of look at it with also the lens of what's coming, right? Like, with Michael.
Right.
Which is so interesting, because I think John is one of the few people that's not like, I think he's uncomfortable. I mean, we're getting ahead, right? But I think he's uncomfortable with Michael, but he's not, like, outwardly as hostile.
As Ronan.
Let's say Ronan, yeah. Right? Obviously, it's, like, yeah, Ronan is valid in it, too. But you can just kind of tell that, like, throughout the episode, like, he's uncomfortable, yes. I think he could have maybe been swayed in the direction of pro-Michael if things hadn't gone horribly. So I think that kind of, or I kind of take that into consideration when I look at this episode, right? So it's like maybe trying to understand, because at this point, right, he hasn't even met Todd. Like, they've barely met. Mm-mm. Like, all he's met is, like, the queen, right? So I think this could have been really interesting, because it's like, this is sort of like shaping the team and their opinions on Wraith. And I wish we had gotten a little more of, like, I guess maybe their interactions, or I guess, like, Ronan's makes sense, Taylor's makes sense. I would have maybe wanted a little more of, like, Roddy's just uncomfortable, but it makes sense too, because he's uncomfortable with Michael. But yeah, just these first interactions are so important for what we're going to see later.
You know, you said something that also made me think of something else too. You mentioned how it'll shape how they view Michael, but also the next episode, John is going to go through a transformation as well. So it'll be interesting to compare how the team thinks of John when he's going through this transformation versus how they view Elia, someone they don't know as well. And someone who was a Wraith first instead of a human first. I think that'll be interesting to think about next episode when we talk about it, comparing those reactions. That'll be spicy.
It's not a perfect segue, but I think, like, we talked about Michael and about the retrovirus. We mentioned it at least. And I think we're probably going to talk more about it when we get to those episodes. But I think it brings up an interesting moral question, right? Like, is it okay to change the Wraith and sort of extract the human? Because it's not like, Wraith are not like the Ghouls in SG-1. They are not like a parasite that takes over a host. They are a completely new life form. The two separate creatures. And they are an evolved species. And while I was watching this, and especially Zedek and Carson appealing to the human aspect, like the human aspect in her, I thought, isn't it kind of inappropriate to see her as like half human? Because for me, the Wraith are the Wraith and not part human. They are their own species. And like, whatever you think about experiments on living things, I think we all agree there that it's kind of shady what they do in this season or in this show. Like, do you think it's okay to see her as only like half human and half Wraith instead of like, or half human, half Erator's bug? I don't know. Because
that is very interesting. Very good point you're bringing up. This is so funny. This is an episode of, not even about the episode. I think, we all agree that what they did is wrong, right? That's why we always joke Atlantis war criminals, because, girl, what the fuck? Yeah. What the literal fuck? You know, we kind of talked about this a lot with member Ty back during our bonusode with Daniel Jackson, and how sort of the story of friendship just kind of, well, especially SG-1 and Atlantis, just sort of other, or I think just mainly Atlantis, sort of like other, like, the Wraith. And so they kind of make them like this, like, they turn them into like it's them or us thing, which is like, yes, but no, like, it's just a whole thing, right? But at the end of the day, it was wrong of Carson to be like, yeah, she's half human. Girl, where did you see her parents? And I think it's very telling that Carson would say that. And I think, I wish we kind of would have gotten like a reaction from the team to that sort of word that Carson used. Because I wonder how their reactions would have differed, right? But we're going to see that in Michael, but where they like, some of them think that what they're doing is right, and then some of them don't. Only Taylor. But everyone else is like, yeah, we have to take, like, we have to fight back. We have to do it this way. And they're, like, dressing it up as, oh, this is more humane. But it's not. They're changing them against their will, you know. And I think, again, it's, like, I do think the show sort of maybe got better with that. And I don't know if it's because everyone was yelling about war criminals or what. But I think towards the end, don't they sort of, like, decide just to maybe make, like a feeding serum? That changes it, right? So instead of just changing them into humans, which is like, what the fuck are you doing? That should have never been allowed ever. You know, we can debate on whether or not that's ethical, but I think a lot of us can agree that at the very least it's a much, 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 much better option than changing them against their will and sort of being like, well, making them as like the villains, right? Which is, like, obviously, it's, like, it sounds stupid to say, because, like, okay, they're eating humans. Like, obviously, like, it's, they're semi-villainous. But they do so in a way that, you know, it's not like they can help themselves. This is an evolved species that came from this stupid little bug that we all hate. You know, it's not like they especially John. It's not like they are doing it just to be evil, just to be dastardly.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Yeah.
And so, well, I know we're going to talk about this for the rest of the show, basically. But I hate the retrovirus.
But I think, I feel like the show unintentionally showed the horror of being transformed against your will in this episode. Like, Elia did not choose to become an Aratus bug, but she wanted, or she was told that she should want, to be human. And that's what she took the retrovirus to become. And instead, she, through this horrible fly-like transformation, becomes an Aratus bug instead, or closer to an Aratus bug instead. And the change is horrific. She's gone, essentially. Anything that was remotely like the old Elia has disappeared, at least from the viewer perspective. And then this happens to John in the next episode. And then no one on the team really looks at this, maybe besides Taylor, as like a warning or an omen, that maybe this is wrong. Like, maybe this is not something we should be doing. And instead, they're like, oh, we're not, it's not ready yet. Like, we haven't perfected it yet. Like, it's not time to do this yet. So yeah, it's such a hard moral dilemma. It's really, really bad. But clearly, being changed against your will is gonna be horrific, regardless of the creature that you're turning into. And also, they mention in the episode, it's not as if the Wraith, like you mentioned, Sam, are half human and half Aratus bug. Like, they just come from the Aratus, truly. Like, it's not as though an Aratus bug mated with a human and then made, like, a Wraith. The Aratus bug adapted human qualities through feeding. It was, like, a process of evolution instead of, like, a mating scenario. So that's another thing that's sort of, like, interesting. And also kind of pokes holes in the whole retrovirus thing, because, like, do they even have human DNA? Because if you're telling me that they evolved to have human qualities and didn't actually mate with humans, then they don't actually have human DNA to begin with.
That's why it fails with Michael miserably. Because it's like, girl, he's going to turn back into who he is. You're just imprinting like these fake human traits in him.
Exactly. Everything you just said to her, exactly. That annoys me so much. They just assume, yeah, they assume that about the Wraith and then go on with their little experiments, and it ends horrible. And it's just, it's so, I don't know if it's patronizing, or, but they say humans are the best form and everybody should be human. That's why we're gonna make you human. And it's just such a harmful idea to have of the universe. I know the Wraith are not your friend. They try to eat you, and they think of humans, like, their view of humans is not a very positive one. Like, if they had, like, the humans had come to the conclusion that it might be a good idea to try to come to peace with the Wraith, then in order to accomplish that, the Wraith had to understand that human beings are worthy of living, basically. So obviously the Wraith way of thinking and way of life would have to change and adapt as well. But that doesn't happen, and it also doesn't happen, like, there's no will on the human side to change and see the Wraith as a species that is sentient and that could possibly in some far future be, I don't know, just coexisting.
Yeah.
I get too into politics either. But, you know, people always say that, like, there's a clear, you can see sort of like in every Stargate show, sort of like that it was made sort of like a time capsule from that period. And this is so post 9/11 US, where it's like, we have to get back at everyone, or we have to get back at the people who hurt us. And it's like, I don't want to get into all that. But you can just see, like, that mentality was coming from Canadians. Like, with their Canadian writers are like, girl, where is this US patriotism coming from? And so, yeah, you can just see it's all over the show. And it's like,
yeah, I was thinking something similar as well, that this idea that the humans, which everybody should want to be, whether they're human or not, like sentient beings, it feels like a very white perspective. Like, basically what they are doing, like, white cisgender perspective. Because they're basically doing conversion therapy and saying, yeah, our way is the only way of to the Wraith. Our way is the only way. And yeah, it's not a good look.
And I mean, it sucks, right? Because at least with SG-1, like, yeah, there's problems and, like, you know, we always criticize it or whatever. But it's also like, at least the villains there, like, okay, like, they're easy villains. And maybe that's, like, to the detriment, but I don't know. They're, like, they're easy villains. And, like, it's, like, okay, yeah, like, you have a set goal, you know? They're not, and I appreciate that Atlantis tried to do, like, a, oh, but, like, it's not their fault, it's just biology. But they went about it, like, in the worst way. Like, they didn't try to have, they gave them this nuance by being, like, oh, look, like, they have this, it's their biology. And they were, like, but we're gonna kill them all anyway. And it's like, why would you create nuance if you didn't want to explore it? And that's why everyone's like, dude, your characters are fucking, like, war criminals. Like, what are they doing? Why didn't they just make them evil space people that choose to suck life? Maybe they, like, engineered themselves to suck the life out of humans because they were tired of being lower, like, than the ancients. They wanted to become, like, the ancients. They're like, we have to find a way to take them down, and so they were like, let's just suck the life. Like, I, like, what if they wanted to go full evil, just go full evil. Like, you didn't have to try to be smarter than you are, because you aren't.
Also, side note on that, we called the Wraith space vampires before, right?
Mm.
And yeah. Did you notice that the first Wraith that they kill in the episode, like in one of the flashbacks, they kill him with a with wooden stake, and it was like
Buffy.
That's funny, actually.
The Buffy of the Pegasus Galaxy. Oh my gosh! They should. That's what Taylor should dress up as for Halloween. She should be. She should be Buffy the Wraith Slayer.
Yeah. Oh.
That's canon. That's canon. Taylor would be the biggest Buffy fan.
Mm-hmm.
They made her watch it. Like, it's one of the things that someone brought to the Pegasus as like their personal item, and somehow Taylor caught an episode, and then she was obsessed.
Hooked.
When was Buffy? When was it aired?
It aired like before Atlantis was on TV,
1997.
Right?
1997.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Same year as
SG-1. Oh, nice.
Perfect.
Amazing. She makes Elizabeth watch it too.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone watches it. Everyone gets into it. Ronan would be so into it. John is into it.
Oh, John would love it.
Because he thinks the pants that they wear are cool. He's a loser like that. And because the bands, they play all these cool bands. Yeah, Ronnie loves it. To point out all the inaccuracies.
I love it. They have weekly screenings.
Yes.
They make it a thing for the team.
Kayla watches episodes without the boys and they get mad at her for watching ahead.
Yeah. Yes! Yeah. She totally does that.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking of some shenanigans where it's like the Wraith are attacking and it's like the season 5 finale and Taylor's like, oh! Taylor's like, you cannot! Like, that's a huge cliffhanger too. She's like, no! And they're like, sorry, Taylor, we have to get to work. We're gonna die right now. She's like, just so angry while killing Wraith. And she's just doing it as quickly as possible so she can get back to season 6.
Yeah.
Cannon. I love it.
Killing them with Buffy moves.
Yeah. She's doing the flips, the kicks.
Speaking of Taylor.
Yeah, let's talk about our characters this episode.
Let's get into it.
No, this is just a tiny thing. When Elia attacks her and kind of like hurts her and they find her and like, she has blood somewhere, and I'm like, oh my god, she's hurt. But secretly, I was really happy because it's a perfect setup for some hurt comfort.
Haha, yes! Oh, yeah. You should do a Tale of Epic where, like, she comes back to base and her head kind of hurts because she, like, hit her head or whatever. She's bleeding from the head, I think. The back of her head.
Yeah, yes, she does. I was going to wait for the next episode to see if there's any scene where I can tie it in, and if not, I just write it.
Yeah, do it.
Yes.
But on top of that, I really fucking love that scene. I really love it. So the after bit anyway. So she gets attacked by Elia. John and Ronan stumble upon her in the forest, and then John's like, you stay with her, I'm gonna go after Elia, and Ronan's like, okay, and stays with her. So there's a couple of things that I like about that scene. One, I really love how, like, John takes off his jacket and gives it to Taylor like that. John, so cute. He's such a like carer. Like, he cares so much for everybody on his team, and that was such a sweet, like, totally subconscious gesture that I really love to see from him. But then what I really liked was Taylor and Ronan's conversation afterwards, which was amazing. Taylor was kind of angry that Ronan stayed behind, and she was like, what are you doing here? Like, you should have gone with John. And Ronan's like, well, aren't I supposed to do everything that he says? Like, isn't that how the military works here? And Taylor's like, no, sweetie, no. We only listen to some of his orders, and the rest of them we ignore and do what we want. And and Ronan's like, how do we decide which ones we listen to and which ones we don't? And Taylor's like, well, we decide. Like, it's our choice when we make those exceptions. And I just, I love them so much. I love that she said that. Because I think it's important early on to make sure that Ronan doesn't fall into the trap of, like, always just doing what John says. So I feel like over time that could probably build resentment between them just because of the personality type that Ronan has, him being a military leader himself on his own planet. But also, we get a peek behind the curtain of Team One, sort of this idea that John is the leader in name. But it's really a collaborative effort, and, you know, Taylor knows that he's not perfect, knows that his emotions for his team can get the better of him, and so she needs to protect him in her way by knowing what orders to follow and which to ignore to make sure that he's being protected, not just the rest of them. So I liked that a lot. I liked that scene a lot. It was great. Excellent.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes in this episode. I was just cracking up while you were talking. Because the whole interaction between Taylor and Ronan is just so funny. Everything you just said. Him asking, aren't we, like, supposed to follow orders? he says that, and I was like, so what I was thinking was like, oh, they have kind of their own set of rules. Like, yes, they are supposed to follow John because, yeah, they are in his team. They are not from Earth. So I'm not entirely sure how the hierarchy goes or how much, like, do they have a contract? do they actually work for Atlantis? What's their deal, basically? So what I was thinking was like, yeah, so they're supposed to listen to John and everything, but he can't really order them sometimes because they are not, like, military-wise, they are not under his command in that sense. But I also like what you said about Taylor just knowing that John isn't flawless and that they sometimes, yeah, have to protect him, or just like that she kind of sees when he's about to fuck up and just like do the other thing. So yeah, I like both those sides to this. Yeah, we are supposed to follow orders, but
yeah, and no, I love it so much because I am always just a big fan of when Stargate is less military, right? Mm-hmm. We always talk about that. But that's why I love seasons 9 and 10 of SG-1. Not that they're less military, but that the team dynamic feels less rigid. They don't listen to Cam very often. And Cam often says, I am not the leader. Like, they're the same rank as me. I can't tell them what to do, really. He's just kind of like the de facto one. Sometimes I'll listen to for plans. But like, if they're going to do something, they're going to do something. They're not going to, you know, listen to Cam, and that's fine because they have equal experience. And so I love that sort of transfers into Atlantis. I mean, it creates like a much more relaxed team. It just very much feels like, you know, like Ronan could talk back, or like Ronan could like make his own decisions. And obviously John sometimes might not like that, but sometimes he'd be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Or like, you're right. Like, let me take point from this. Like, you know this better than I do, kind of thing. And it's just something I just really appreciate. And it just creates more of like a family dynamic where it just sort of feels like they're friends, you know? And I love that Taylor's kind of like, I would love to see more of Taylor like teaching Ronan about like Earth customs and stuff. Like, Ronan gets like these rules and he's like taking them to Taylor like, okay, wait, like what? Like, do I have to follow them? Or like, what can I break? And she's like, all right, here's how you do it. Just teaching them about like customs in general. And I think it's kind of funny because I wonder maybe if like, obviously that we don't get nearly enough of like Rodney and Taylor's dynamic. Mm-hmm. But I like to headcanon that Ford and Rodney sort of taught her in season 1 how to navigate Earth people. And I think that could have been a really fun dynamic in that she's kind of passing that knowledge on to Ronan.
Oh, I love that.
Question. Is Rodney the best person to teach people about Earth?
No. That's why. That's why he's like, I'm going to teach you. And then Ford comes up behind her later that day and he's like, don't worry. I'm going to unteach you everything that Rodney teaches you because it's not going to work out.
Thank you for clarifying. Yeah. That's amazing.
Rodney's one of the funniest things, too. I can totally be like, Rodney's like, okay. He's like, you have to be first in the cafeteria. He's like, or else you're not going to get the good food. He's like, just push people. He's like, or make up some lie. Make up some deadline you have to meet so you can get to the front to get those, like, blueberry muffins. And Taylor's like, okay. And Ford's like, later, like, no. Ford's like, don't do that. Here he's like, Rodney, and she's like, why does Rodney get away with it? And he's just like, he doesn't, bitch. Like, do you see how everyone hates him? Do you see how everyone glares at him after he takes the last blueberry muffin? Like, no. Yeah, so just little funny things like that I like to headcanon.
Well, you know, speaking of Taylor and Rodney in this episode, I thought they had a couple of nice scenes together finally. I feel like it's been a while. I think, what was my favorite? Oh, when they first find Elia in the cave, it's like the tiniest moment, like so minor. But when Shepard tells them to put their weapons down, Taela actually moves a little bit so that she's standing in front of Rodney. So like if Elia decides to attack, like she will be in front of him, like to defend him. And I was like, my heart melted because I just feel like Taela acting as Rodney's bodyguard is like my favorite trope of all time. And that was the sweetest. So sweet. And I also really loved how they were like whisper talking in the corner about Elia, like while she was standing 2 feet in front of them, like so gossipy. Very sweet. I like when they interact. I wish they had more throughout the series, but those were our nice crumbs in this episode.
Yeah, I think he's so underrated, and I hate that it's sort of like always like the one that's like less developed, right? Because at least she has like some. She has a great relationship with Rodin.
Yeah.
She has a great relationship with John. Sometimes they'd be fighting all the time, but they have an on and off friendship. And then we just don't really see a lot of her and Rodney, but we do see that like you know they care about each other in like the little moments, right?
100%.
And I think episodes are like these are just the funniest because I think they show you what their dynamic really is, and it's like they're shit talking best friends in the back. Openly gossiping about Elia like in her house while she's like 10 feet away from her, and they're just like, dude, they're like, have you ever seen anything like this? And Taylor's like, no, and he's like, is this real? And she's like, I don't know, and it's just so. That's what I want from them, and I think we get a little bit of that later in the season 3 episode. Ugh. Responsible,
True.
but we get a lot of that where like they're sitting next to each other and they're just like full on glaring at Lucius, and it seems like that where it's just the potential of their relationship is so fun, and we get little hints, but I always just want more of their shit talking. And their judginess together.
Me too.
Yeah, they're so judging. I love it.
Well, I was gonna say, since we're on the topic of Taylor, I know we kind of brushed on it earlier, but I did want to go back to her conversation with Elia, which I just love. I think it's such a good Taylor moment. I think it just totally encompasses her character. Like, she would be the one to go out of her way to talk to the one that maybe others are like alienating, right? And she is like helping her and like giving her reinsurance, and she's like confiding in her, like, hey, like I have this thing too, you know, and like we're kind of similar in certain ways with that respect. So yeah, I just love when she gets to kind of be her kind self and also kind of a leader, because it's not like John's gonna do that, bitch. Like, it's not like Rodney's gonna do that. You know, it's not like anyone else is gonna do that. So she's like taking it up upon herself to try to establish a relationship with this person. And I also just really love that they finally mentioned that she has powers, right? Like, it hasn't been brought up. I don't think it might have been. I just don't remember. But I don't think it's been brought up since, you know, the Siege Part 3 or whatever. And so, if that's true, then I am happy that they finally brought it up. Although I do wish again that they had kind of seen her struggle with it a bit more. She seems already kind of like totally fine with it, which is like meh. But it could have been a season-long arc. But whatever. I'm just happy they're bringing it up because I think eventually they just kind of forget that it's a big deal. But.
Yeah, I agree. I love that we get to see her compassion and like you said her sensitivity. Like I feel like the boys they don't have the capacity for this sort of emotional conversation, so it's kind of always falls on her to connect
Yeah.
with the people on the planet. But I think it was especially gratifying because they were so connected in that way, like they both had that power to sense the wraith, and instead of Taylor being like disgusted or put off by it, like she used it as a means to connect with Elia. And, you know, almost mentor her in a way and on how to use it effectively and for her own benefit instead of being tormented by this wraith guy with visions. So, yeah, it was nice to see.
Yeah, also, I love that about Taylor in general, that she's, like, she's certainly not completely unbiased, but she always seeks connections with people. And even though she has all this history with the Wraith, and I see this as especially in contrast to Ronan, who is like, he sees Elia, he sees that she's Wraith, and Wraith means evil, Wraith means villain for him, and he completely hates her and rejects everything and doesn't see that maybe there's a there's not just one way for the Wraith to exist, but Taylor sees this Wraith, this child, basically, and sees that she's different from the Wraith, sees that there could be, like, she sees the opportunity of a connection and she acts on it. And I think that's really valuable to have, and to have her on the team. And I loved, yeah, that they made her this person who tries to connect to people no matter their background.
Yeah, the ability to put her personal feelings aside, you know, about herself, about the Wraith, her personal, like you said, bias, and try for the benefit of the team and for Elia too. And her being the one of all of them to tell Ronan to stop when he almost attacked Elia was even more powerful too, considering, you know, she is the only other, well, on the team, the only other Pegasus native who really knows the effect of the Wraith. Also, since we're loving Taylor, I just wanted to bring up in the beginning of the episode when the guy is basically telling them to hit the bricks and leave the tavern. The face she makes is so good. Speaking of, like, the judgy face, like, that was the best. Ugh, sassy as hell. That was great.
Aww.
Love her.
Taylor is such a... Like, her facial expressions are just... They are amazing. Like, yeah. Also, her eye roll. Like, she can look so judgy, but her eye roll is, like, the most iconic in, like, the whole of Stargate, I feel like.
So true.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, speaking of the first scene we get out of the team in the tavern, there's just so many funny, like, I just want to, since we're nearing the end, I just want to, like, hit the little mini points, right, of just things we've picked up. And I just love everything about that. I love that John just rolls on up to this little tavern and is like, howdy, folks. He's so dumb. He's acting like he's not from Virginia. Like, who are you, howdy? Like, he's so dramatic. I love as well that Ronan and Rodney give identical waves in the back after John says, howdy. And like, they both wave at the same time. And I think that's so one brain cell of them. I love it. I also just love how Ronan's like, oh, one wraith? Oh, cool. I'll be right back. Like, he just like, he's like, all right, I'll be back in the morning. Like, he's like going off on his own journey, and John's like, okay, hold up, we'll go with you. But he's just like very much like, all right, I'll be back in the morning. I also love Rodney's just so, there's no other way to say it, Rodney's just so baby girl this episode.
He is, really.
He's in the background and he's just hilarious and he's just doing his own thing. I love his expressions in the tavern when he's excited about the food, and then when they're like kicking them out, he's like, oh yeah, he's like, yeah, that makes sense, you're kicking us out. Obviously the iconic, he's yelling at the kid. And the team is just staring at him like they're cracking up because they're just like, yeah, that's so you. They don't even like question it. They're just staring at him like, okay. It's like they're laughing, but they're also giving him like minor looks of disappointment. It's like, I don't want to be better than you.
Yeah, it's so funny you brought that up because like kids are obsessed with Rodney. Every time there's a kid, they are obsessed with him, and it's he hates it. It's like they know that he hates it, and so they are always like trailing along behind him, being super annoying, and it's great. It's wonderful. I love it.
He's so bad with kids. I'm so
terrible.
I mean, I'm not saying that it's a good parental guide to say, hey, if you don't do your chores, you will be eaten by the Deimos. But also, just like saying, yeah, we're gonna kill him so you never have to do chores again. It's also like, kind of counterproductive.
Really telling of how Rodney was as a child. Like, I'm sure he got into logic arguments with his parents about why he didn't have to do his chores that day or watch his sister for the day.
Yeah.
Exactly like that.
Also, yeah, I love how obsessed he is with food. Because, like, same, like, the way his face lights up. Like, they are, like, still in the doorway and, like, oh, you should come in and get have drink and food. And his face just lights up, like, in the background. So it's like, oh, food! And then later, there's something, I think they bring the drinks and he's not happy with it. Also, a moment that I loved, Ronan just chucks it and Rodney is like, what is this? I don't like this. And then, so, about the food, is that still coming?
Yeah, that was another instant gif scene where I also... There's like two types of people at a party. Rodney sniffing, sniffing the ale with a disgusted face, and Ronan just like downing it like it's just a shot. Hilarious. Yeah, I love that he's so picky. It's really wonderful. Another thing that was really funny about the whole tavern scene is the fact that nobody expresses any sort of sympathy for the guy after he's like, yeah, and my son got attacked and killed by the Wraith. Like, nobody says, like, oh, sorry. Sorry that happened to you. No, they're like, oh, okay, so we're gonna leave now, I guess. And, like, there's no, like, what happened? They're so teed off about their reception that they just forgot how to be human for a second. This is terrible.
Oh my god, they are the worst. They are the worst. The fact that Taylor didn't even say anything too. Oh yeah. My gosh.
Like the mean girls of the Pegasus Galaxy.
Together. Continuing on as we're going down sort of a episode, obviously we get the iconic scene of Ronan just being in the front and like checking things out, and Ronan just shit-talking, and then Ronan being like, I can hear you from like 20, 30 feet away, and then John smacking Rodney up the head. I was gonna say, first of all, though, what does Ronan have super hearing power? Because how does he hear that?
I know.
It was far, and Ronnie was like not yelling. Ronnie was just like talking normally, and it was like, he's Batman. He has superpowers that we just don't know.
Yeah.
No secrets are safe from Ronan's ears.
But I think it's just a funny scene of like, it's not even just a funny makeshift scene. I also just think it's a funny like. Them three, one brain cell kind of scene. I think it shows we don't get enough of them three as like a trio.
Mm-hmm.
But like when they do have like these little moments, you just see that like it's kind of funny because I feel like they always end up ganging up on one person. I mean, like it's usually Rodney.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe like I know occasionally I think I definitely can see like Rodney and John sort of ganging up on Ronan. But I think it's very rare that John gets ganged up on by Rodney and Ronan.
Yeah.
But
that's too bad.
Yeah. Oh, he deserves it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, again, I just love kind of how they've been portraying John and Ronan's relationship. Mm. It's just very, like, seamless. And you can tell that it's just, I mean, they have a great, you know, friendship off screen, right? They're besties to this day. Joe and Jason are always hanging out and celebrating their birthdays together and stuff. So I think it's just like that natural friendship with them that we kind of see here. But I just love that their dynamic is very much like John being like, don't do it. Don't do it. Oh, no, he did it. Oh, God. I got to go after him. Like, that's kind of what they've been like so far. And I love that. And I also just love, of course, skipping a little bit ahead, I love that little scene at the end. Obviously, the cool scene with the guns, and they lean up together and they're like, yeah, just their little moments are really adorable.
Their team ups are always the coolest. Like, we're going to have another one soon. And they always look badass. Like, you can't deny.
Yeah.
They look awesome side by side.
I want to mention really quick, I just love it. This is, like, Ronan's best era. And I'm kind of mad that they sort of styled him so well in the beginning. And then it just kind of drops off. I love when his hair is pulled back into that sort of, like, low pony. And I also think his outfit is just so much better. I love the tan coat. I think the tan coat looks so good, and just I hate that they changed it. Get away from him.
What did they change it to? The coat? I can't remember.
Beige.
Mm-hmm, it's right?
Isn't it more? It's like a dark. It's like the tan shirt. I think. I don't think he wears a coat after that. I don't remember, but so fabulous in it. Mm. I had another little mention. I was just cracking up at or literally watching sort of Elizabeth's downfall.
Oh yeah,
being tricked in. I love that scene of that little tiny scene of her and John and Carson talking, and you know they're telling her about the retrovirus, and I just wanted to scream at her through the TV. I was like, Elizabeth, look at me. This isn't you. Look at me. Don't do this, Elizabeth. No.
Yeah.
Because she sort of lets herself. It's just really, I don't know if she puts up much of a fight. I think she, unfortunately, I think she has too much trust in them. Ooh, Elizabeth, no. I just think it's sort of like the first step.
Oh, yeah.
That we see. Sorry, I'm almost done. I love that Jason is so damn tall.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. And that scene in the game when it's like Taylor scolding him and she's like, I almost craning her neck to look up at him, and he's almost kind of like hunching down. She can yell at him. Hilarious. And I eat it up every time.
And we had that in the last, not the last episode.
Yeah.
But you had it recently, right?
Yeah, Trinity, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where she kind of like pulled him into the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Small but mighty.
Continuing on the trend of Rodney Baby Girl-ism, I love just the little spiel we get where he starts talking about why he doesn't like biology and why he literally self-diagnosed himself in college and he had to drop the class because he was, like, so stressed out.
Listen, this is the most relatable that Rodney has ever been. When I was in university, I took pre-med like an idiot. Not because I wanted to be a doctor, just because I like science. And I was like, this would be good. Half of the courses I took were, you can get this disease, this is how you get this disease, this is how this virus infiltrates your body and fucks it all up. This, look at all these genetic diseases that can happen in the womb. Look at all the horrible things that can happen to you. Literally, anybody, any sane person, or any overthinker, I should say, which I feel like Rodney also is, would have a meltdown taking biology in university. So I understand his hypochondria, and I sympathize. Because to this day, I am fearful for my life. I get a strange cough or, like, a pain under my arm, and I'm like, it's over. I'm dead. These are the five diseases that I could have right now. That'd take me out.
You and Rodney. Confirmed. Confirmed. Almost nearly same person.
terrible. It's terrible.
Your Rodney Kinney is jumping out. They didn't have much, really, until this point. But I actually love that Carson is the one who saved Rodney.
Yeah.
Friends. I think they have some, like, you know, they're talking, like, he's just mostly like, Rodney, shut up. I'm trying to figure this out. But once they're out hunting Elia and, like, hunting that wraith, it's fun. I think they do, like, they have a few, like, funny, like, looks. They exchange looks with each other, and they're just like, are we in trouble? Or, like, did you hear that? And it's just funny. And, again, I just love that Carson saves Rodney.
Yeah. They were both trying really hard to defend each other in that scene. And I was like, damn, okay. Ryder dies. Now I'm seeing it a little bit. I really like the exchange where Rodney's like, I thought Ronan was crazy for trying to track a wraith in the woods. And Carson was like, oh, are you feeling reassured now? And it's just hilarious because they're the two science guys stuck together when really they should have split up and had, like, one military guy, one scientist. And meanwhile, these two dorks are together. Trying to hunt down this wraith. Terrible, terrible odds. But they protected each other, so good job, boys.
They did well.
Yep, you made it through.
Yeah, that's it, though. I'm out of notes.
Yeah, me too. I was out of notes, like, half an hour ago. But I agreed with everything you added. Like, I remembered. I just kept remembering. But I guess I didn't pay too much attention during watching the episode.
No one blames you. No, it was hard. It was tough. It was a struggle.
Yeah, I think that's all I got as well.
Now it's time to go over to Ash for the Bechdel test.
Yeah. I gave this a pass, but with the kind of question mark. Because, you know, the Bechdel test is about, like, it has to involve two women. Like, to pass the test, you have to have two women with a name who have a conversation that is not about a man. And I think it depends on how you define conversation for this episode to pass. Because Taylor and Elia talk a bit, and not the whole conversation is about a man. They talk about all kinds of things, about the race in general, about the visions and the link that the wraith have, and about her father. But I gave it a pass because not everything is about a man.
True. Fair.
I agree with that. I agree.
Fair.
Okay, now it's back to me for some super quick behind the scenes. Okay, so a lot of this episode is actually filmed outdoors, of course, and it was filmed on location at Lynn Valley Canyon in North Vancouver.
Ooh.
Don't know where that is, but cool.
Never been there, but sounds picturesque.
You gotta go and visit Tor and try to find where they spot where John gets bitten by Elia.
Yeah.
And find her cave. So this is actually the first episode that we see Ronan carrying his sword strapped to his back.
Ooh.
Oh.
Which I didn't mention earlier. Yeah, I didn't mention earlier because I wanted to bring it up here. But I love that he just has a freaking sword machete thing besides his, like, already deadly gun. He just has a sword. This is the only episode of Stargate Atlantis written by Melissa R. Beyer and Trina Hancock. So I would just like to apologize and say, sorry we dragged this episode so hard. Let me rephrase that. Not sorry that we dragged it. Sorry that this is the only episode you guys have written and we didn't like it. That sucks. It's written by women. Damn it. Feminism lost today. No, I'm kidding.
At least they got to write something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how many women were there in the writer's room?
Yeah. I wish we liked it more.
Maybe they were planning to expand on it. Maybe. We don't know. They did never got the chance.
I know. I would love to hear the behind the scenes on what happened. Maybe there's some different story. No idea. But yeah, so Jewel State, Elia, is obviously best known for playing Kaylee on the cult sci-fi show Firefly. And she's actually the second Firefly cast member to guest star on Stargate. The first being Adam Baldwin in the SG-1 episode Heroes Part 1 and Heroes Part 2. And in Firefly, he plays Jane, I think, right?
I always forget that.
Huh.
I love that. I wish there was more. I know, I was lost. I wish there was more people. Because I don't know, I just love when casts like get shared around, and I think it's really fun because I think a lot of people, obviously there's a lot of Star Trek people on Stargate.
Yeah.
Farsky. And obviously there's a lot of, yeah, that's true. PSG. And so I like that we have a little connection to Firefly and a little connection to like Buffy or Angel as well. Because I know Adam Baldwin was on Angel.
Oh.
Okay, and then we have Jeff Robinson, who previously played the Wraith Commander in the episodes of Siege Part 2, the Siege Part 3, and the Wraith Pilot in Duet. He is obviously playing our Wraith here. So glad to see he's back.
To play another Wraith.
And so something I found that was really interesting is that the writers and like just a lot of people in general were hyping up this episode a lot. And they kept mentioning, they were like, next season we're going to finally see like a female Wraith, or like next season we're going to see like a Wraith that's like nice and like she's kind and she's different. Huh. Which I think is interesting.
Hmm.
We see her for one episode.
And there's never again another female Wraith besides a queen.
Interesting that they hyped it up like that. Like, I feel like if we time traveled, and I was on those forums and I was hearing that, I would think it would be like a recurring character. Like they might come back for something. So interesting.
That leads into my next thing is that Jewel State was actually asked to reprise the role of Elia, but she just found the makeup process way too laborious.
Oh, yeah.
She was also like hired, like, I think she said she was like doing like a film. So like right before she had to leave to like London or something, they asked her to come in and do like all these molds for the prosthetic and stuff. And she was like, whoa. So she was like, yeah. She told the companion, they said, okay, we'd love to have you back on a different show. And luckily no one will recognize you. Maybe we can have you back as a completely different character.
That's so true. That's a good thing about Keller. The prosthetic.
Yeah. So interestingly, they tried to bring Elia back. I don't know, like,
maybe they just scratched the whole idea.
Yeah, maybe then like they wrote the death ending for her. That does suck though, because I think it would have been nice to see her pop up again, because she's such, you know, we didn't really talk about that, I mean, we kind of mentioned it, but she has like a nice heart, right? And you always just kind of feel bad that she ended in that way.
Yeah,
I wonder though, could have recast her if they really wanted her to come back, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know that they try to, like, especially, I think we mentioned it with other Wraith that they had, like, yeah, one or two Wraith who had, like, who they had the masks molded to and that they could just reuse. So, like, maybe they didn't want to do all that again for a new person. I feel like a Wraith would have been easier recast than a human.
That's what I was trying to say. Well, I was going to say, for the actor who played Michael, I'm forgetting his name right now. Ash, you know him, right? What's his name?
Connor Trinneer.
Yes. Mm. Okay. So him, he actually couldn't, like, I think he wasn't available sometimes to play Michael for some reason. So I think they actually had another actor play him during the Wraith scenes, and they would just dub his voice over, I'm pretty sure.
What?
for like, what? I want to say that's true. I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I think that happened in like season 4 or 5 or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because I never looked at him and thought, because he has a very distinct face. Like that guy has a very distinct face. And so even with the prosthetic, I feel like you would be able to tell if it's not him. Interesting. Huh.
But I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere where they were like, yeah, he couldn't be there for some reason. So they had to... So that is interesting that they just scrapped the idea of her coming back, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it's too bad.
But yeah, that's it. That's all I had for this episode. We can turn it on over to Tor and Ash for the Fic Corner.
Ash, take it away.
What, me? Okay. Wait. Okay, so, yeah, I have a fic rec. Me. And it's not related to the episode, but it's something, actually, when we started, when we came up with the idea of doing, like, a fic corner, I had to immediately think of this, because I was like, okay, the only fics I read are Taylor Beth, or, like, 99%. And a while ago, I started reading, I started with, like, the first Taylor Beth fics on AO3, so I just went back to the beginning. And there's a series by Selene, and it's a series, the series consists of 10 works, and the word count is about 12,000 words in, like, everything. And it kind of follows... Taylor and Elizabeth through the first season up until Before I Sleep. So for almost every episode, there's like a little scene that just explores their relationship a bit more. And yeah, I kind of love this. It started in 2004. So this person started writing for them right when it came out, and I love that there were people who immediately picked up on the Taylor Beth. Oh yeah, and it's called Friendship and More. Sorry.
Nice. I love fic collections. Those are fun. And it's always nice to see, like, fic time capsule. Like, to see fic written at the time of the show. And see the similarities, the differences, seeing what other viewers saw while the show was airing. It's always super cool because not everything had been revealed about the characters yet too, so they can take it to different places.
Just shout out to that writer. Thank you. Yes! Pioneer for the Taylor Beth ship all the way back when. That's so cool.
2005.
Yeah, people even then were seeing, like, the potential for, like, a romance. That's awesome.
Heck yeah.
So, Tor, what do you have for us?
All right. So, it was really hard to find any sort of episode tag or related fic to the episode. So, I decided to choose a fic kind of based on my favorite part of the episode, which is the Rodney Taylor dynamic, of course. And so the fic I chose is called Pilgrim's Progress by Sardonic Smiley. This fic can be found on AO3. We will link in the show notes as always. And basically, it's just a great gen fic for people who love Taylor and Rodney's dynamic. Their type of banter, them working together to help the expedition. Essentially, the Team One and a couple of Atlantis personnel stumble upon a planet where there is a cult society that begins infecting the base, and Rodney and Taylor, through their very different religious backgrounds, come together to basically save Atlantis from the crazy cultists. It's an excellent, excellent thick. There's some really emotional moments between the two. There's also some really fun John as a side player in this fic, so I highly recommend people go and read it.
It sounds so much fun.
It's great.
I know. I can't wait. I can't wait to read it. All right, and well, be sure to check out all of our social media down in the description box below. You can check our Jumping Puddles official ones, and we also have listed some of our private ones. You can go follow us there and see what we're up to on our day-to-day lives. Do we need to write this episode? We always forget we're bad at it. Oops. But I think it's because it's just hard to put it into a number.
Yeah,
it is.
Like a 6, right? It's above average, but I'm not going to go back and rewatch it. Yeah. Maybe a 7.
That's true. A 7, yeah, I was, 6, yeah, I was thinking a 7 because, like, I don't have, like, strong feelings about it. Mm. Nor, yeah. Neither, especially negative, nor positive. Mm. There's not enough Elizabeth.
True.
But yeah, it has those moments that are just fun to watch, and it has the expanse a little bit on the Wraith, and brings up some interesting questions that we discussed at length here. So I think I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I agree, because I feel like, of course, as always, the character moments elevate the episode. So, like, the little character tidbits are always going to get me. So, I wouldn't say anything below 7. 7 out of 10.
I think I'm comfortable with a 6.5.
True.
Sounds good.
That's fair.
I'm comfortable with that. We remembered this time, so we rated it. And that's it. And that's it for today. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Bye. All right, you clowns, listen up, and I'll often get a chance to say this, so savor it. Good work, boys and girls.
Let's go home.